Hey everyone, welcome to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and this is a place where I bring you authentic conversations with people who are willing to share their journey through seasons of grief. No matter your cultural upbringing, societal conditioning, or faith practice, grief affects us all. Whether you're dealing with a loss, a diagnosis, a broken heart, or the everyday stressors of life, or love someone who is, these conversations are here to support you in that process. So be sure to check out the show notes for potential trigger warnings. And whether you're very comfortable with or deeply avoidant of grief and its many responses, you are welcome here. Thank you for being here, and now on to the episode. Hey everybody, welcome to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and I believe I have the crud. I'm just returning today from a birthday weekend trip. This is year three in a row that I have been able to take a solo trip on my birthday, and I love it. It's amazing. And this year I did glamping in Tennessee, and I had all these visions of horseback riding and ATV rental and zip lining. I was going to do a day where there was a place that had all three of those together. And by my second day, I woke up and just felt like I'd been hit by a truck. So the place that I was staying at actually had a hot tub at the, it was a Airstream, and they had a hot tub right behind it. It was amazing. And so I spent a lot of time recovering in the hot tub. I had planned this hike for another day, and that turned into a drive around the area because it was drizzling, and I thought the worst thing I could do is get sick and make this worse. So it was a lot of rest time, which is great. I appreciate that and can transition right into that vibe as well. So, but I do feel it in my throat. It's very scratchy. So I did a lot of reflection this weekend, had a lot of time to reflect on 2024, and it is with consensus of at least the people in my world that we are very grateful that 2024 is coming to a close. It felt like, and I can speak to myself, this was one of the most challenging years for me that I can remember since, I mean, it's probably been, I would say within the last 6 or 7 years. And that's saying something. And it felt like it went on forever. But I can see a very clear delineation in places where there were shifts that happened that helped me to get like just past the, you know, certain things that I was in dynamics that I was in. And then by the end of the year, what felt like a whole year of just difficult, by November, things started shifting, and then I started seeing these things come through that were just amazing that I'd been waiting all year for and was starting to see shifts and transformations. But I wanted to say, I don't know how many people have a word for the year or a theme that you come up with, but I've done this for the past, I put my board up there, 2022 was the first year that I did this. And so heading into the fourth year, I have had a theme for that year. And every year, whenever I pick that theme, it seems it's so on track for the entire year. Well, my year, my word for 2024 was sacred. And I wanted my life, I wanted to be able to feel the sacredness in every moment. And it's really difficult for me because I do get overwhelmed by life. And so in those periods of overwhelm, like to be able to come back into a grounding felt sense of there is a purpose, there are things happening behind the scenes under the surface that I can't see. And that trust in what's sacred brings me to a deeper surrender in my life. Okay. So this is what I wrote at the beginning of 2024. It was actually the end of 2023 for my word. I want to see the waiting as sacred. The conflict is sacred. The no is sacred. Every redirection and every not quite, There's nothing you'd keep from us. All I have to do is trust. This is a line from one of my favorite songs. Sacred speaks to the intention of the action, the moment, and the presence. Not one moment or circumstance is disqualified from being sacred. From the magical to the mundane, all things work together. And right now, I only see dimly, but one day I'll see fully. And that was the prayer, the essence of wanting my year to be understanding the theme of things as sacred. And when I tell you, when it's your first year seeing your firstborn child leave the nest, and one day we'll have a podcast for sure about that transition, to see that as sacred as I was navigating that in real time, was a practice, was a growth edge for me for sure. But because that was my intention to see even that as something sacred and a rite of passage for both him and myself and our relationship and the connection and what that means in the future, and honoring what was in the past and all the things that that brought up, it reminded me of why I value these conversations so much. So I had these big transitions this year, in relationships, in family dynamics, in life, and I did feel the power of even starting this podcast at the beginning of the year with that being my intention, that these conversations we would have would help others to see what's sacred about their own process and what's sacred about their grief, and that every emotion, not one, is disqualified as not being necessary and sacred. So today I have compiled all of the podcasts and taken little snippets from each one and wanting to give what is the small doses of medicine. And so maybe you'll be something will get pricked and you're like, oh, I want to hear more about that. And you can go back and find those episodes, and be able to listen and go into a little bit of a deeper dive. But I really want to say thank you for those that have listened to the podcast, those that continue to support it, that give feedback, that engage with me in the material. One of the things that I noticed this year is, so I have a day job and then I do this podcast as a passion project on the side and in my evenings, and the guests have always been so gracious with the fact that I have that scheduling, and so they'll schedule around that, and it's been amazing. But one of the things I noticed this year is that whenever, wherever I was, if anybody in my world mentioned the podcast, or that they listened to the podcast, or they wanted to talk about it, or they heard something and they're like, oh yeah, I listened to your podcast the other day. And I would have people like send me little screenshots of where they were listening, and it was up on their car screen, and they would send me those pictures. It lit me up to know that others were participating and here and found it valuable and found something, a little nugget or something that prompted them to go deeper into their own process of grief and giving themselves permission to grieve. So I'm really grateful for everyone that listened, and I'm most excited from all of these snippets that come up throughout this episode of being able to hear all these different people. And I cannot tell you how encouraged I have been every time I would interview someone and then post it. It was like all week or however long, like I just was with the conversation that we had for days after, and just integrating it or just trying to metabolize it. And every single one of these conversations affected me in profound ways. And I think also the process of getting to the conversation. So for me, as a person recording a podcast who's never done anything like that before, it was just a fun experience learning how to do it, and also learning what not to do, and also learning dynamics of people that you have no relationship with whatsoever, and you're trying to dive into deep conversations, like learning the nuance of that. It it was just, it has been an amazing first year. We're not quite, I think February is like the anniversary. But being in the vein of retroflection this weekend and at the end of the year, coming up with or knowing what my 2025 word is, and being excited about that too, like all of the things that I intended to see last year, it may not have come in the form that I meant or like expected, but so many of those intentions and those prayers and those longings were met and in ways that I never would have dreamed. But one of the things that I am most proud of is a space where I could take these long form conversations that I normally have in private with one or two people and do so with such confidence and excitement and ease and take that into recording in front and sharing that in front of everybody. That part has been a growth edge for me, and I am so incredibly grateful that I was willing to grow that trust muscle and be able to just push play on the recording and sharing it. So I am grateful that you're here. For those that have only listened to one or those who've listened to all, whatever has brought you here, I'm grateful that you are here, and I'm grateful that you would give this information or conversations to other people in your world, and that you share whatever lands for you. And thank you again. And I hope that you guys enjoy these beautiful nuggets of medicine. What would you say to that young couple that's just gotten this diagnosis or just going through the revealing of what is to come for their experience in this way?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I would tell them is, you are going to find immense joy that would not have been possible if this had not happened. And I know you don't feel that way today, and I didn't feel that way in the beginning either. It's okay not to feel that way today. It's okay to be frustrated that I just said that. But one day you will look up and think, I have it the best that anybody could ever have it. Mm. How lucky am I to live this life? And I think giving them that reassurance and also telling them it's going to take a while to get there, right, and it's going to be hard, and you're going to, like, please find a way to lean on other people and accept their generosity, accept their love, accept their acts of service to you. I think the other thing is to tell them, I mentioned earlier, I'm an Enneagram 1. I like logical things. I like for things to be good or bad. I like for things to be up or down, mm-hmm, or right or left. Get comfortable with duality. Get comfortable with the gray. I can, in the same sentence, tell you, Rachel, that I would give anything to go back and to save Gabriel from his brain injury. Mm-hmm. I would give anything to go back and change that. And also, I would not change a single thing about my story.
Right.
And I can tell you those two things as honestly as I'm saying each of them.
Right.
It doesn't make sense because it's not meant to make sense. It's just how it is. I both want my son not to face disability and also have the most wonderful story that I wouldn't change because of his disability. Mm. So I think just telling them, you are going to have times that you're going to fight the two opposite feelings as often as you can, just embrace them at the same time.
Both.
Because they're both true.
I just caution people that not everybody does this in a healthy way. And that can feel really alarming to hear someone however many years out saying it never changes, it's never going to get better, is scary, you know? Yeah. And so hearing that that's not exactly true, you know, certainly if a person makes a choice, if I'm not going to do the work, then probably that's true. But not for people who are intentional. If I want to heal, I want to recover, I want to carry my person forward, but I don't want to stop living. Right. The way that I put it to people is, I like to imagine that whatever our people wanted for us in life, to be happy, healthy, well, successful, thriving, all of the things, is very likely what they would still want for us. And I don't think that any person who loved us would want their death to be the reason why we never get to be okay again.
No, I get that, because it's also, and again, with parenting in general, the ability to see how what's presenting, what does your family look like, For me, that was divorce. Like, they're my kids. This isn't the reality that I wanted for my kids, but it's the reality that I find myself in. And there is a grief that comes with wanting them to have had a different experience, mm-hmm. and wanting them to be able to have had both parents in the home for the duration of their time in the home. Mm-hmm. And so there is a facing that of, yes, there is a grief there. And I'm reminded of that daily, almost, you know, just reminded of what they don't have or mm-hmm. what they've lost. And the reality is, like, how do we show up for that? How do I want to show up in light of honoring that grief, but also, okay, my family does look different. Mm-hmm. And so I want to embrace the way that it looks mm-hmm. so that I can be free to just move on to what's best for us.
Yeah.
To be seen as, it's not all put together. My favorite term is messy. It's mm-hmm. messy. Being in a relationship is messy. Having a family is messy. Having kids is messy.
Teenagers is messy.
Yeah, there is definitely a grief that comes with being able to say, this isn't the way that I would prefer it to be. But then I also want to show up to what is so that I can have that freedom, that liberation that you talked about yeah. when you're no longer worried about being told it has to look like this or mm-hmm. you're being too much here. Then when you get past all of that, mm-hmm. you're able to just show up authentically to the family you have. Mm-hmm. And that feels very empowering. But you do, it's a duality. You have grief and that.
Yes, that is very, very true for foster families, mm-hmm. especially ones like ours that don't all look alike.
Yeah.
Because people look and go, well, they should be with a black family.
Mm-hmm.
And
in a perfect world.
In a perfect world, they would be with their birth family, but that isn't the case. And all I can say was I was available,
mm-hmm.
and this is what we are dealing with. It is not perfect. It is not ideal. But thank God, I am thankful that we were the flawed family that was able to come together as a new flawed family. Yeah. I'm thankful for that. And it isn't ideal, but it is for me. You know, it is for them. It is.
That is wondering why.
Yep.
And that why is never going to get answered, Rachel. Mm. What is going to get answered is what? What am I going to do about this?
Mm.
What am I going to do to honor Zoe? What am I going to do to get back up? What am I going to do to survive?
I really think if you are problematically drinking or using alcohol or drugs or have crossed that line to addiction to numb your feelings, you're going to have to table those feelings. You're going to have to work on getting sober first and build the foundation. And I say that for two reasons. One, because dealing with those feelings, walking through them, you know, is incredibly painful and trigger producing. If you don't have a good foundation of sobriety, you're going to go right back to drinking.
Right.
Drinking or drugging or gambling, whatever it is you use to numb with.
Yeah.
So let's build a foundation of skills to keep you sober.
And it's just profound to me because it's those moments, I think, and your story is just showing that and confirming that it's literally pursuing the next thing. Just that next step that gets you to a state of openness of like, okay, I don't want to just lay down and die. I do, but I'm not going to choose that. What could I do next? I love that.
I think that at that point, I was open to the idea that people say that's not what your loved one would want. Well, he didn't tell me what he wanted, but I can tell you this, that's not what he would do.
Right.
He would be living life to the fullest. Mm. So it's not what Collier would want. It's how can I honor Collier?
Mm. So walking through, of course, like that just brings up grief that the potential in your coaching is to meet someone's grief in the sense of they just found out that it didn't work. They had a miscarriage. What have you gained from the beginning days of this work to now that that has helped you facilitate grief? What have you learned about grief since the beginning to now?
Well, in the beginning, I was definitely that person who would say things that were more hopeful and positive to be like, it's okay, you try again, like you've got this. And over time, I've learned that they need to go through all the steps. There's no shortcut through it. And the best thing is just to be present to witness the grief. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I actually don't even have the perfect words to say when somebody's going through it right in the moment, because there aren't perfect words. It's more of being right there with them and literally most often virtually. And sometimes that is enough.
Yeah.
And it's just holding the space to me feels much more powerful and effective than having this one sentence to say the right thing. And I think that's where people get in trouble. And hey, before I did this, I also was an offender of saying all the wrong things. And I've learned from that, not only in infertility, but in other experiences too, where if somebody lost a parent, I'd be like, oh, it's cool. At least you had a good parent. Like, what? No, right?
Comparative, like, yes, but at the same time, it's still your loss, absolutely, right? And you own it. And so whether, you know, people act like grief is like a resource, right? That needs, it's like, nope, your parents need all of that right now. No, actually, unfortunately, grief is unlimited and abundant. There is plenty for everyone and we're all allowed to grieve. Now, what I wouldn't want to do is demand that my parents, you know, ignore their own grief and only help me in mine. Mm-hmm. But I think that's like one of the really difficult things that I talk about a lot in the book is it's okay that we're grieving a lot and it's okay that our parents are grieving a lot. And unfortunately, what that means is that we can't help each other. Neither of us are in a position to be, you know, the primary support for the other one. And so that's really hard in families where you're used to being the primary support for one another. Yeah. And that's where a lot of families, I think, end up having a lot of issues are, you know, parents relying on their kids as their sole support, as if their kids aren't already grieving. And that's right. When the grief ends up getting put on the back burner. But we can all, you know, going back to my comment about people asking how your parents are doing, you know, I think the solve is still ask how my parents are doing, just also ask how I'm doing.
Right. Right. Not that's to all. The exclusion right. of asking how they're doing.
Right. Exactly. It's fine to ask how my parents are doing. Just also ask how I'm doing. That's all. Yeah. You know, they are allowed to grieve as much as they need to grieve. Just
it would seem like what could prevent someone from getting to that level of empathy might be what could be stuck with their own anger and their own grief. As you said, what's underneath that anger is right. your own grief. That
sure.
You,
And acknowledging and dealing with this is what I've lost, this is what I'm losing, this is what I'm probably going to be losing in the future.
Right.
Because it's an everyday thing. You're grieving for years. So is the person who has the dementia.
Yeah.
And this is not true. This is true not just for people with dementia, it's for people who are losing any kind of capabilities or abilities or, yeah. you know, things about themselves and their identity, they're grieving too.
Yeah.
We go, I'm willing to go because now I'm sober. I'm 12 years sober at this time. And mind you, I was doing all the work. You know, anybody out there who's listening and who's in recovery, I wasn't just sitting on my laurels. Like I was doing the work. I was in the steps. I was sponsoring people. I had my sponsor. Like I was in therapy actually when I got engaged. I was there for about 2 years. So it's not like I hadn't been self-reflecting. It wasn't like I've been like running from myself. But I always say, you don't know what you don't know until you know it. Like it had to be revealed and certain layers had to be peeled before this big thing I could actually face it and see it. And it's just strange how life does that. And that's what grief does. Grief just like brings stuff up that without your consent, really, just like shows up like, oh, yeah. Okay, there you are. You know, I don't really want to see you, but I guess I got to look.
Which I loved when I asked you, what is grief? What has shadow work taught you about grief? I loved your response.
That it is absolutely all over the place. it's not just reserved for, you know, loss and transition. There is grief in so many aspects of our lives that we don't even realize. And, you know, our grief is demanding to be felt, why I think so many people are waking up to it right now and how sad we are. But yeah, our grief is, it's not linear. Right. it is not linear. And I think it's just so important that we honor it and give our grief a safe space. It's an honor to be able to feel our feelings. Yeah. It really is.
It really is. And I think that's why I want to create the podcast, is just to be able to make it just an everyday thing. Oh, it's grief. Like, everybody could go, okay, I have to face this. I welcome this. It's grief. I can do this.
Yeah. Stop saying I'm fine. Yeah. Those words, I'm fine, when you don't mean it, can be detrimental if you don't open up. You know, the grief, you can overcome you sometimes. The grief takes over sometimes, and you have to speak about it to release that tension and to know that you're not alone in your suffering and your sadness.
They're walking in front of these strangers, these people that have totally different cultures and beliefs than they do. And they find out that God's already at work in those moments, right? Yeah. And so I think for me, from a theological kind of personal faith perspective, to believe firmly in my heart and in my mind and grounded in my faith and in scripture, that God is already at work in this room and in this space and in this dynamic. And I want to be able to tap into that. Mm. And so I'm not trusting that I'm going to be the one that has the right thing to say. I'm not trusting that I'm going to somehow bring God into the room.
In the room. Yeah.
You know, like, oh, Doug's here. The chaplain's here. It's okay. Now God has come in. God has entered the chat, you know? I mean, yeah. I'm trusting that God is already at work. And so I guess in some ways that takes this responsibility off of my shoulders and frees me to just follow his lead.
So now I want to ask if there's somebody listening who's like, okay, I'm really considering that I would move out of this very duty-driven, others-focused world of high intense stress, and they want to move away from that, what are some of the things that you would say, hey, you're going to need to know this. This is what you're going to face in order to do that. What are some of the things they're going to have to face?
There's going to be resistance along the way. Like external resistance from peers. There's going to be resistance from your spouse potentially, because you're going to need time to do this, or your partner or your kids or whatever. You're going to have internal resistance of like, this is scary. This is painful. I don't know what's on the other side of this. I don't know who I am without the job. I don't know who I am without the trauma and all those kinds of things. It's going to come up no matter how hard or how much you prepare yourself or how hard you work, you're going to run into resistance. The next thing I would tell people is don't do it alone.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many great resources out there that are, you know, Uncivilized is one of them. If you need an ear, I'm here to listen. Right. Yeah. Like, We've got first responders from all around the world that are a part of our organization, that are also willing to listen. Find a local peer support network. Find a culturally competent therapist, because they're out there. There are lots and lots of therapists out there that are trained specifically to work with veterans and first responders. That doesn't mean that, like, being a therapist doesn't mean that you know everything that there is to know about being a cop or
shocking to me, because I wasn't aware. I was one of those completely oblivious to the fact that I even had wounds that were preventing me from closeness and connection with women. Because, and when I found out, it was because I had put on my what I wanted for the following year, my list at the beginning of the year, and I was like, I want to join a women's group. Like, I'm ready for community, because the community, the last time I experienced community with women, there was a lot of wounding there. So shortly after my divorce and the wounds that I had from having to leave community and not receive that same support, I just wasn't interested. And then when I finally was, I said, I want to join a women's group. I had seen yours. I had seen the Heartspace community, been following you for years. And I was just like, I didn't do it. But what I, that was 2023 when it first went on my list. And that whole year I did not join. It was like a nope. Every time I tried to even like, let me, no, like a nervous system shutdown. That's not happening. And, but what did happen is I did find Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and I found her book, Women Who Run With Wolves. And I feel like that's where God said, okay, you're not quite there yet, but this will help you get there. And that book was so sacred, and I think is a must read for every woman that wants to just understand the beauty of who she is and who we are as a collective. And that laid the foundation for me to fall in love with what it is that our purpose is as women and what we give to each other in community. And when I joined, and I, so I finally joined, pulled the trigger. And what for me was just the absolute sign and seal of, yes, this is it, was your pillars of participation video that you showed us to all those who joined. And it was your, as you say, your social expectations, like, hey, try to show up this way in the group, because everybody else here is already showing up this way. So why don't you, you know, a conscious participation, as you call it, of this is the way we're structuring the space. And when you read, there are eight of them. And when you went through them, I was like, yes, oh my gosh, this is what it's like to feel safety around women or in any relationship that you're in. And it just sealed the deal for me and was like a no-brainer. Okay, this is safe. Even if my body, if my nervous system was still wanting to throw up every time I posted originally, you know, or like share vulnerably, it can be, it can, there's fear there still, but my body could relax with what felt safe. And then the vulnerability could show up. And for those that are listening that aren't in a women's community, that this is just your, these are your friends. These are the people that you want to invest in. The more that you're willing to show up there, the more you're willing to share, the more it works. The closeness that you're after comes through that sharing, comes through that participation. And so the knowing that you receive just as much as you give in this space, that's reciprocity. That's how it's supposed to work. And a lot of us, and for me personally, have not felt that consistently. And so to know that I can trust when I receive, or when I give, I'm going to receive as much back.
Yeah, totally. I use some of Dewey Freeman's language of like within this, our community space and within any relationship, when we give, there's a, an aspect of that that's like creating an opening. You're sharing our heart, and it's, it, you're literally like rolling out a stage for someone else to come and meet you.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's amazing. You know, like there's some, a way that our egos can be entitled to think that we have to wait for others to initiate everything. It's like, yeah, what if that, what if we just flip that? We don't have to overshare. We don't have to share our whole life stories. We don't have to, we don't have to be burdened by it. But it's like, if there's a longing in the heart for connection, then like create the opening by opening yours and see who comes.
Podcast is that when we have issues around attachment that we have to work with, the primary piece that we need to do is allow ourselves to grieve the loss of our parents and the loss of that attachment with our parents. And there's a whole piece in here that sometimes we're actually grieving the loss of what we know as what our parents could have been and are typically should have been, because we have, I believe, like an instinctual knowing of the archetype of a healthy mother and archetype of a healthy father. And we know that. And we know, we don't know as little kids what it is. We just know that something's missing.
Right.
And, or that something needs a shift, or It's like, why isn't this happening? We understand that piece, but we haven't put together that we're really, that we actually really know what a mother is.
Yeah.
From an archetypal perspective, or what a father is from an archetypal perspective. Sometimes we are actually grieving the loss of a parent or both parents. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we're grieving. Many parents come in and they really do the very best they can do. And because of their wounding, even they may not be able to do what really needs to be done. So it's not only grieving of that loss of our parents, but it's the grieving of the archetypal mother and the archetypal father.
Yeah.
And how that affects us and what we know that to be.
Ambiguous grief is the diagnosis of a parent with dementia, where even though they're still here, you talk about them in the past tense.
Yeah.
These are deaths with no funerals, funerals with no caskets. Mm-hmm. And what you find is that when the tears are falling, people surrounding you, they do not have a casket to connect it to. Yeah. And so from their standpoint, it's like,
why are you upset?
I don't understand why you're sad. Look at all the stuff that you have, and people just don't get it. So you have people whose body physiologically responds in the same way. So you talk about the way that your heart literally swells as you grieve, and it doesn't care if it is a tangible or an ambiguous loss. So everything in your body is saying, this is grief, and there aren't people to validate it. And so it feels, if amnesia or anesthesia are the ways that we isolate ourselves in our grief, I think apathy is the way that other people isolate us in ambiguous grief, and that they just don't see or don't care to see or don't care.
I didn't know until I got probably a year or two on the other side of that when you're in a state of hyperarousal and you're in a state of trauma, you can't decipher, oh, that's excitement. That adrenaline's excitement. You're excited to be there.
Yeah.
It's fun. This is fun.
Yeah.
It's not, there's danger, there's fear. Mm-hmm. I'm looking down the stadium stairs. Okay, what if somebody trips and they have a head injury and hit their head on the concrete? Like, I couldn't watch scary movies, couldn't watch exciting movies.
Yeah.
I had to be real. I mean, Rachel, I was probably like a, 80-year-old living my best life in a retirement home. I could do puzzles. They were mindless. I love to read. I couldn't read because I couldn't hold my focus.
Yeah.
I didn't want to watch a show. I mean, it was like, well, I guess I'll sit here and I could do a puzzle. It feels like progress, but I'm not exuding a lot of energy.
Yes.
I'm like,
but can I tell you on this? No, but on a daily basis, people listening to this, if somebody asked me and said, Rachel, what do you do when you're overwhelmed or when you're shut down? And when I'm in the survival mode, I'm like doom scrolling. That's what I'll find myself just doom scrolling.
Yes.
And it's and so common among people, but it's one of those where if in the moment, which you mentioned awareness, if I can be aware that I might be doing a behavior that's linked to something else, that might be linked to an experience I'm either avoiding or that I'm overwhelmed by or whatever that looks like, that awareness is the first step to go, okay, this behavior is linked to, I need to pay attention to something.
Exactly.
What am I needing to observe? You said my chest gets tight, my heart's racing, stomach's hurting, throat's closing up. These are all cues to let us know that something is happening internally that we need to pay attention to. And it's an invitation for that. And so,
that's a beautiful way to say it. It's an invitation to show up for ourselves.
Yeah.
And say, how can I serve you?
Yeah.
And that can look a lot of different ways. It can be, your blood sugar might be low, go eat a snack.
Yeah.
Take a nap, you're tired.
Right.
Move your body, Heather. Get outside, move your body, get some blood flow to your brain, give it something to do besides freak out over what if scenarios.
Right, right.
But, so yeah.
And nothing, and that I just want to state, nothing in your external world changes it is not about changing the external world. You can't prevent the person falling from down the stairs, the players getting hurt on the field, choosing to go out there and do that. Uh-huh. It's the focus then goes internal. That you got a message from pain, and I want to quote that, that you got while in that dark room. The message from pain was this: lean into me and experience me fully. You cannot numb one area of your life and not numb another. When you numb your pain, you kill your joy. When you numb your fear, you crush your courage. When you numb the present moment, you steal the innocence of a child's laughter. You shoo away the butterflies that want to come in and dance in your stomach before an amazing first kiss. When you deny yourself me, you deny the love and the happiness and the peace you all say you're running towards. The light will never be more intoxicating than after you've sat wholeheartedly in the darkness and fought to keep your heart open. Tears just streaming the first time I heard that. It was true. Can you talk to us about the work, not only in that room, but what it taught you about life, about keeping your heart open?
That's the fight.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the ultimate fight and the ultimate journey and the ultimate challenge, and it is the ride. People are looking for religion or looking for God or looking for meaning. That's it to me. I don't care if you want to call it Buddha, Allah, Jesus, fight to keep your heart open in a world designed to slam it closed.
Right.
And in a journey that, even if the world was designed otherwise, that will come and try to close it. I mean, the first noble truth of Buddhism is life is suffering. We will age. Mm. We will get older. Our bodies will change. People will die. People we love will get sick. We will get sick. The things that we are attached to, we will no longer have access to at some point. People will hurt us. People will betray us. People will, it's just part of the deal. Just, and that, I think at the time I wrote that, you know, we didn't have handheld devices that were pumping atrocities from all over the world into our consciousness every 15 seconds in a video.
Yeah.
But that's the fight, Rachel. It's, can you feel it? Can you learn from it? Can you stay open in the midst of all of the chaos and turmoil and pain and heartache and heartbreak that inherently comes with being human? Right? Because if you can, as I said, you will keep it open for all of the beauty and the magic and the majesty, the awe. Do it in a rote fashion. You can do it with your heart closed and you will be protected.
Right.
But you will not make the same art. You will not make the same love. You will not experience life in the same way if you can keep it open.
Okay, everybody, that wraps up this episode of the Grief Informed Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the compilation of so many amazing voices with amazing messages, medicine that is meant to transform our lives and help us integrate the grief that we have day to day, years long, or acutely new. And it's my hope and my hopeful expectation that wherever you are in that process, that you will feel seen and welcomed and supported while you're here in this space. Thank you again, and I hope that you have a great day.